Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 4, 2014. Our date is Sivan 7, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Love Divine, All Loves Excelling. Love divine, all loves excelling, joy of heaven to earth come down. Fix in us the humble dwelling, all thy faithful mercies crown. Yeshua, thou art all compassion, pure unbounded love the heart. Visit us with thy salvation in every trembling heart. Breathe, oh breathe, thy loving spirit into every troubled breast. Let us all in thee inherit, lest us find thy promised rest. Take away our bent to sinning, Alpha and Omega be. In the faith as its beginning, set our hearts at liberty. Come Almighty to deliver, let us all thy life receive. Suddenly return and never, never more the temples leave. Here we would be always blessing, serve thee as thy host above. Pray and praise thee without ceasing, glory in thy perfect love. Finish then thy new creation, pure and spotless let us be. Let us see thy great salvation, perfectly restored in thee. Change from glory into glory, till in heaven we take our place. Till we cast our crowns before thee, lost in wonder, love, and praise. Part 3, Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, by the B.T. Hartifer, going to have a subtitle of our sermon today is The Nondescript Beast, of Daniel 7, 7. And so it says, following the four-headed leopard becomes a nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7, representing the fourth universal empire from the flood, but the fifth one from the creation. Rome is represented by a more terrible symbol than the kingdoms before it. There must be a special reason why the Roman monarchy is represented by the nondescript beast. The symbol reveals that the Roman system of the government was an arrangement that could not be described. The nearest approach unto a correct name is the term nondescript. We shall now consider its government administration for the crucifixion of Yahshua and the martyrdom of the Christians. Give evidence that the Roman executive authority was vested in the paganism, which was at war with the Christianity. As these Christians were put to death for the refusal to worship the gods of the people, it is obvious that the Jews used the civil arm of Rome to try and enforce their own religious custom. Yahshua being an example, for he was crucified as a result of the religious controversy. Rome in the first century persecuted the Christians, but after adopting Christianity, she ill-treated the pagans, compelling them to join the so-called Christian church. From the evidence gathered, it is plain to see that the Roman monarchy was a tool for either pagan, Jew, or Christian, alternating in favor of the one and then of the other. Inasmuch as the character of the imperial Roman jurisdiction could not be defined as pagan, Jew, or Christian, the nondescript is the only fitting symbol. It is said of the Constantine at his death that his subjects knew not what kind of burial to give him, since he was a professed Christian, but at heart a pagan. Perhaps many nations, as well as some professed Christians at this present time, are nondescript like the Romans, for the Apostle has described their condition thusly: for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto attempts to establish ecclesiastical governments. For the question may arise, what hinders Satan from the establishing of an ecclesiastical monarchy before the closing period of the Old Testament? Well, the only answer that can be given is the Jewish nation permitted him to be cloud their eyes. They were told not to make a confederacy with the world, but unmindful of the command, they made a league with the Romans, and that is what helped Satan to accomplish his scheme. For the following will show that this great enemy of the mankind tried this same procedure in the days of the Babylon. For the Nebuchadnezzar, as the king made an image of the gold, whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, he set it up in the plain of the Dura, in the province of the Babylon. Then an herald cried aloud, "Unto you is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, ye fall down and worship the golden image that the Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up, and whosoever falleth not down and worshipeth shall in the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." For the nations and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image. Okay, Daniel 3:1-4-7. But there were three Hebrews found who rebelled against the king's command and refused to bow down unto the idol, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Answering said unto the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our Elohim, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace was seething hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fire furnace. Then the Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like unto the son of Elohim." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near unto the mouth of the burning 5 furnished and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High Elohim, come forth and come hither. Daniel 3:16-18, 20, 22, 26. Then these men came forth unhurt. It is wonderful what Elohim accomplished with but 3 slaves against the world's empire. These 3 men, with the faith in the Elohim, broke the satanic contrivance, abolished the establishment of an ecclesiastical government, and brought the king's decree under naught. Satan worked out a similar plot in the Medo-Persian government with the plans that were carried out by the intrigue, taking the king unawares. Though Daniel was cast to the lion's den, he too came out unharmed, but his enemies perished, as did those who threw the 3 Hebrews into the fiery furnace. Thus Satan's power was broken in both of these ancient empires. Had there been such men as these Hebrews in the days of the establishment of the Roman monarchy, or at the closing of the Old Testament history, and during the commencement of the New, the conditions would have been entirely different. For the world is in the urgent need at this time of the men like the 3 Hebrews, who would rather yield this present life than to offend their Elohim, men like Daniel, who looked with a strong faith unto the Yahweh, and was without the fault in his religious and secular duties. By such men as these, the world has been blessed with the everlasting benefits and rewards that no human lips can describe. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation. As saith unto Zion, Thy Elohim reigneth. Thy watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Yahweh shall bring again Zion. Isaiah 52:7-8. The Red Dragon, Revelation 12:3. And there appeared a great wonder in the heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of the 12 stars. And she, being with the child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. Now keep in mind, these 12 stars on her crown represents the 12 apostles. And there appeared another wonder in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the 3rd part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Revelation 12:1-9. For the dragon was seen in the heaven, and being cast out, it is obvious that the symbol is of the heavenly origin. Of him it is said, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. Note that the dragon is a symbol of the Satan, even as a lamb having 7 horns and 7 eyes is a symbol of the Yahshua, Revelation 5:6. Since the numerous beasts from an unbreakable chain of the world empires, the dragon cannot intersect between the links as a symbol of a separate earthly system. Thus he represents just what the scripture says, the devil and Satan. The figure is given to reveal Satan's scheme at a certain time in our world's history. For the woman clothed with the sun is understood to be the Elohim's church. The child under which she gave birth was the Yahshua. For the 12 stars that comprise the woman's crowns were originally symbols of the 12 patriarchs. This will be made plain in another study. Therefore we shall endeavor to make clear the time of the dragon and his work. It will be noticed that the dragon stood ready to devour the child, Yahshua, as soon as he was born. It is evident that the old serpent armed himself with the 7 heads and 10 horns prior unto the birth of the Yahshua, meaning he took over all the churches in his time, And he took over all the governments in the world and put them under one head, and that was Herod, the ruler of pagan Rome. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven, for the scripture is self-explanatory as to who the symbolical stars are, for the inspiration says he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Therefore, the third part of the stars represent the angels who were deceived by the Satan's controversy. Quoting Testimonies for the Church, Volume 3, page 115, Satan, in his rebellion, took a third part of the angels. They turned from the Father and from his Son and united with the instigator of the rebellion. For the question may arise, why draw them with his tail and not some other way? For the symbol is perfectly capable of the indicating of the manner in which Satan drew them onto the earth. Had it been done with the claws, it would denote that the Satan defeated Michael, Yahshua, and by force dragged out a third of the angels. But since he drew them with his tail, the significance is that a third part of the angels joined him in the rebellion against the Michael. But when the dragon was cast out, naturally, he was coming head first, and as he drew them with his tail, it revealed that they voluntarily followed him. Thus, Yahshua could do nothing for them. War in the heaven. And his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angel, and prevailed not. Now there was a place found any more in the heaven, Revelation 12, 7 and 8. For the conflict was in the heaven, for the name Michael means who is like Yahweh. Hence it is the one of the many titles of the Yahshua, and Yahshua in itself is also a title, and Messiah, the Hebrew, is also a title. Yahshua is his name. For the Daniel calls him Michael, the great prince, which stands for the children of thy people, Daniel 12:1. Yahshua has numerous titles, each bearing a definition of a certain phase or character of his work. For the angel said unto Joseph, and thou shalt call his name Yahshua, for he shall save his people from their sin. He is also called Emmanuel, meaning Elohim with us, etc. Time cast out. Satan could not have been cast out of the heaven immediately after he sinned, or when he deceived Adam and Eve. For in the Job 1, 6 and 7 we read, now there was a day when the sons of Elohim came to present themselves before the Yahweh, and Satan came also among them. And Yahweh said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered Yahweh and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. The sons of Elohim are the representatives of the unfallen world, equal unto Adam before he sinned, created by the hand of Elohim, and representatives in the same capacity as Adam could have been had he not fallen from his throne by the sin. Quoting from the spirit of the prophecy, for the commanders of the angel host, the sons of Elohim, the representatives of the unfallen worlds, are a symbol. For the heavenly council before which Lucifer had accused Elohim and his son, the representatives of those sinless realms over which Satan had thought to establish his dominion, taken from the Desire of Ages, page 834. Satan still had access to heaven in the Job time. Therefore, he must have been cast out at a later date, says John. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child, Revelation 12:13. For the next necessary step is to find when the dragon first persecuted the woman. That is the apostolic congregation of the apostles. we shall then have the truth of the time Satan was cast out. For that time the persecution is recorded in Acts 8:1, and Saul was consenting unto Stephen's death, and at that time there was a great persecution against the church which was at the Jerusalem. They were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of the Judea and Samaria except the apostle. Thus the great persecution against the church was about 34 A.D. For it is true that Satan persecuted Yahshua before that time, but Yahshua is not the woman. He is the child, Yahshua, whom Satan wished to devour. Therefore Satan was cast out immediately after Yahshua ascended on the high. For the spirit of prophecy, speaking of the occasion, said, all are there to welcome the Redeemer. They are eager to celebrate his triumph and to glory their king. He presents unto Elohim the wave sheaf of those raised with him as the representatives of that great multitude who shall come forth from the grave at his second coming. For the voice of Elohim is heard proclaiming that the justice is satisfied. Satan is vanquished. Now serious toiling, struggling ones on the earth are accepted in the Beloved. Before the heavenly angels and the representatives of the unfallen worlds, they are declared justified. Satan saw that his disguise was torn away, for his administration was laid open before the unfallen angels and before the heavenly universe. He had revealed himself as a murderer by the shedding of the blood of the son of the Elohim. He had uprooted himself from the sympathies of the heavenly beings. Henceforth his work was restricted. Okay. Whatever attitude he might assume, he could no longer await the angels as they came from the heavenly courts, and before them accused Yahshua's brethren of being clothed with the garments of the blackness and the defilement of the sin, the last link of the sympathy between the Satan and the heavenly world was broken. Okay, that's taken from the Desire of Ages, page 834 and 761. For the time that he drew a third a part of the stars as the angels from the heaven, and the time of the war in the heaven were two distinct occasions. He drew the angels when they followed him from heaven onto the earth and sought to devour the child, and that was at Yahshua's birth in about 4000 B.C. But whenever he was cast out of heaven was 33 and a half years later, after Yahshua's death and resurrection, for which Satan and his angels were responsible for causing the evil men at the Jerusalem there to the Romans, the pagan Romans, Herod and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes, they all conjoined together to crucify the Savior. And when the dragon saw that he was cast out into the earth, that is, after the Yahshua was crucified, Satan at his return unto heaven was forbidden an entrance. Thus he saw, understood that he was cast out. Then he persecuted the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene creed of the apostles and of their converts. For the dragon's horns and heads, for the only possible time for the application of the symbolical horns, heads, and crowns would be with the closing of the old dispensation and at the commencement of the new. For the dragon appeared in that form when the Yahshua was to be born, for the horns represent the same as they do on any symbolical base. Being 10 in the number, the symbol denotes that the effect of his scheme was universally felt, meaning the whole world and all the nations were affected by Satan's actions. for it also signifies that the Satan had obtained full control of the nation, which was symbolized by the 10 horns of the nondescript beast of Daniel 7, and thus he moved upon the Herod to kill the children at the birth of Yahshua with the hope of the destroying of the Savior, devouring the child. Let us not overlook the fact that all the horns, heads, and crowns were present when he stood ready to devour her child. Consequently, whatever the meaning by these symbols, all must be in the existence at the same time. Had this not been so, the symbols of the heads and horns would have so indicated by the coming up one after another, like the beast and also like the horns of the ram and of the goat of Daniel 8. The same is true with the nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7, from which three of the 10 horns were plucked up by the roots. Where systems and governments do not all exist at the same time, for the symbols appear one after another in their correct order. Thus we see that inspiration is perfect in every respect and faultless in the revealing the truth intended. Therefore, it would be inconsistent for one to conclude that the horns as well as the heads could represent a consecutive order of the system as long as they all appear in a group and in the oneness with the beast that carries them. It is also impossible that both horns and heads could represent civil governments or kings. If the horns stand for the political system, then the heads cannot. If the wounded head on the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13:1-3 represents a religious organization, and all the heads must stand for the religious system. However, there is an exception with the four-headed leopard of the Daniel 7:6, for he is without the horns, and his heads are proven to be civil by the four horns of the goat. It is an unmistakable fact that the symbols are intended to reveal the civil and religious faces during the period represented by the nondescript beast. In both his stages, imperial and papal Rome. As the crowns denote civil authority, and as they appear on the heads instead of on the horns, it is evident that the church in that period was using civil dictatorial power to propagate her dogmas. Thus, the lessons embodied in these symbols are far greater than we can comprehend in a moment. As the facts brought forth regarding the nature of the symbols cannot be questioned, we have a positive foundation for their application. For the dragon with his seven heads and 10 horns with the crowns on the heads appeared at the birth of Yahshua, as previously explained, and occupies the period parallel with the nondescript beast, for the heads are represented by the biblical number 7, meaning completeness, and embrace every religious system in the days of Yahshua. As the dragon represents the devil who controls the heads, the symbol unmistakably denotes a complete apostasy. It is not intended to reveal that the dragon or the pagan system of the worship was headed by the devil, for it has never been otherwise. It was the Jewish church that had apostatized, and that is what made the biblical number 7 heads. And in this amazing, the 7th church Laodicea also in our day apostatized, and she represents the 7th head of our time. Just such an apostasy had gripped the world in the days of Noah, and its wickedness made the continuation of the world impossible. Therefore, a necessity for the good of the mankind brought about the flood, for the terrible apostasy of the Jews made it unavoidable another disaster similar to the dreadful deluge, as the Elohim could not overthrow the world by the water the second time, and yet keep his never-failing promise unto his faithful servant Noah. He sent his son to die in the world's stead. Therefore, the world perished not because of the supreme sacrifice of the Son of the Elohim, and the world exists today because Yahshua rose from the dead. And I'd like to add now, Yahshua had to come in the antitype and be crucified again a second time in the spirit, in the word, and in the spirit of the apostatized Laodicean church at Gilead Center. And so therefore he had to go through a second phase of bringing the old world to an end. He brought the New Testament world to an end in the antitype of the Adventist church, because we are told as soon as these seven completed numbers are completed with the Adventist church, that the new world order starts and the new world begins with the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven. That Daniel 2:44 and 45 predicts that in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Okay, and so he has to plane off that seventh mountain, Laodicea. He has to plane her off. At Gilead Center 2002, he planed her off, representing the whole of the Adventist church. Okay, and brought the antitypical physical, fleshly, carnal Pharisees, Sadducees, and the scribes once again to an end in the form of the Adventists and the Davidian Adventists and the Branch Davidian Adventists in Kermit, Texas. For the dragon's crowns, next we note the crowns and their significance. It has been explained that the crowns denote civil authority. For the heads being crowned, it reveals that the churches at that time employed the civil arm of the state. Had this not been true, the Jews could not have crucified the Yeshua of the glory. Neither could they have stoned Stephen nor beheaded and killed the other. It was the civil arm of the Rome, headed by the dragon, through which the Jews committed these terrible crimes, resulting in their own destruction. Well, Gilead Center represented the whole Adventist world throughout the whole world, and the Davidian world committed the same atrocity. And she was brought to her utter bitter end. 2003. For the accuser of the brethren, after the dragon was cast down from the heaven, according unto the vision, says John, and I heard a loud voice saying in the heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our Elohim and the power of his Messiah. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our Yahweh day and night, Revelation 12:10. Satan's accusation against those who seek the Yahweh are not prompted by the displeasure at their sin. He exalts in their defective character, for he knows that only through their transgression of the Elohim's law can he obtain power over them. Prophets and Kings, page 585. When the spirit of Elohim prompts to reprove, he will reveal sin and rebuke the sinner. But Satan encourages the sinner to unconsciously commit himself in the transgression, then he accuses him before the great judge in the heaven as being clothed with the garments of the blackness and the defilement of the sin. To secure his condemnation, Elohim's people must learn to detect the voice of the spirit of Yahshua as well as the spirit of Satan. When the two clash, the one will strive for obedience and the Elohim's word, but the other will excuse the sin and just sympathize with the sinner. In this way, Satan gains a ground, for the sinner loves his sin. Okay, end of that subject. We're going to now the title for our next subject in this study. The Church of Elohim and the symbol of a woman, represented by the woman in Revelation chapter 12. And there appeared a great wonder in the heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of the 12 stars. And she being with the child cried, travailing in the birth and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born, and she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of the iron, and her child was caught up unto Elohim and unto his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared to Elohim, and that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation 12:1-6. Note that the objects shown in the vision were in the heaven, not on the earth. Therefore, whatever these symbols may imply, they must be of a heavenly origin. Again, note that her only clothing is the sun, and that her crown is composed solely of the 12 stars. And those 12 stars now, it represents the 12 apostles in Yahshua's day. In Jacob's day, it represents his 12 sons. Observe that she is not standing on the moon. For the Revelator says she had the moon under her feet. We must carefully study the character of these symbols, for thus only can we learn their significance. Also mark that she was to be delivered of a man-child, and that the same was called up unto Elohim and unto his throne. It is an admitted fact that the child was the Yahshua, who ascended on the high after his resurrection, Mark 16:19. For the symbol being of the heavenly origin, the woman cannot represent Mary, the mother of the Yahshua, but she denotes the church woman that was to bring forth into which Yahshua was to be born. Thus John, in the vision, was looking back beyond the birth of the Yahshua. It has been taught by some that the woman is a symbol of the Christian church, that the moon under her feet is to denote the Mosaic dispensation or sacrificial ceremonial system that had passed away, and being clothed with the sun to mean the glory of the gospel and the new dispensation. According unto the following, these claims prove incorrect. If the woman represents the Christian church, how could the same church woman travail in the birth with the Yahshua by whom the church was founded 30 years later? If we say she represents the Jewish church, how could she fly into the wilderness and remain there from 538 until 1798, a 1260-year period, I might add, in the apostolic dispensation? B.T. Holler calls it the Christian dispensation. And indeed, that period between 538 and 1798 is the correct definition as with the Christian dispensation, because the Catholics had taken charge of a church and state theocracy over the world, and so she had amalgamated with the apostolic Christians that had apostatized, and so she had them under her control, and so she assumed that name or that title, Christian, meaning people coming out of Christ's era. By virtue of the Catholics now naming themselves Christians with the outward show that they are claiming that they will be descendants of the Christian converts unto the apostolic congregation in the first century. If the moon under her feet indicates the end of the Mosaic sacrificial system, why did it not end before the birth of Yahshua? Since the moon stayed under her feet before he was born, if it had ended at that time, could it have been a symbol of the death of the Yahshua? If her garment of the sunlight is a symbol of the gospel in the Christian dispensation, how could the church woman be clothed with it years before the gospel dispensation began, having been clothed with it before the child was born? Which one of the two churches, the Jewish or Christian, gave birth in Yahshua? If it were the Jewish church, then how could the light with which she was clothed be applied to the Christian church. If these questions cannot be answered, then we are obliged to go deeper into the subject. For the idea advanced that the woman is a symbol of the apostolic congregation of the apostles, and no doubt the apostles are represented by the 12 stars on that woman's crown, and the moon of the Jewish ceremonial system proves incorrect, for the apostolic congregation was founded about 31 A.D., or not earlier than 27 A.D., at which Yahshua, at the age of 30 years old, in 27 A.D., began to preach, being about 30 years of age. Therefore, the symbol points back at least 31 years before the beginning of the apostolic congregation, for the woman representing the church of that was present at the time, being ruled over by the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the scribes, which were from the house of Esau, Mount Edom, occupying and ruling upon the throne of David, the everlasting throne, or usurping that throne, actually. Tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, because that's where Yahshua came. He came to his own, they received him not. Yahshua is of the lineage of David, son of David, the tribe of Judah. Said he came to his own. Who was his own? The Pharisees, supposedly, was his own. But his own was represented by the members, the laity of the temple, and that was the apostles and their family members. Okay, so he says the beginning of the apostolic or the Christian church, for the woman church was travailing in the birth and pain to be delivered. Thus it was that the Jewish congregation that brought forth the son of the Elohim, and not the Christian or the apostolic congregation. Therefore she, the Jewish church, being with the child, cried, travailing in the birth and pain to be delivered. That is, the promise was made unto Israel that the Messiah is to be born through that nation, by that particular woman, congregation of the Pharisees. The old dragon, knowing the channel through which the child was to come, closely watched with the intention of the destroying of the promised one as soon as he was born. For it was then that the dragon, by the hand of the Herod, slew all the children that were in the Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, hoping to do away with the coming king. See Matthew 2:16. For the evidence proves that the symbol of the woman takes in both the periods B.C. and A.D. Therefore, as the moon was under her feet before the birth of Yahshua, it must be a symbol of a period of the time which had preceded the Jewish church. As the woman was clothed with the sun before she brought forth the child, it is evident that the symbol clothed with the sun was fulfilled before the birth of the Yahshua. If the moon is symbolical, then the symbol of the sun must be the main object, for the moon depends on the sun for the light, and the woman was clothed with it. Thus the sun and the moon must be taken into the consideration in the Genesis 1:16. We are told that the sun and the moon are to rule the day and the night. The sun therefore must denote a period into which Elohim's church had been given great light, and the moon must be a symbol of the preceding period, for the great light cannot be the gospel of Yahshua in the New Testament. Neither can the moon represent the ceremonial system with the Jewish economy, for the woman is clothed with the sun, and the moon is under her feet, while the ceremonial system is yet in the existence, for the child is born after the woman had been clothed with the sun. So Yahshua himself, by the eating of the Passover just before his crucifixion, established the fact that the ceremonial law was still in the existence 34 years after his birth. See Matthew 26:18-21. If the above statement is correct, then we must find two such periods that would perfectly fit the symbol, or the symbols. For the first is the one before the Bible came into the existence, and the second is the one with the Bible clothed with the light. For the written word, the Elohim, thus symbolically, as the first period, or in the first period, may be called night, ruled by the moon, and the second day ruled by the sun. Therefore, the woman, clothed with the sun and travailing with the child, is the period after Israel went out of the Egypt, and at that time the period without the Bible, moon, was passing away. We shall bring forth another proof from a different angle, making doubly sure of the idea that the woman represents both periods before and after Yahshua, Revelation 12:14, state, and unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and a half a time, on the face of the serpent. Note that she was given two wings of a great eagle. If their wings were not symbolical, but their object, as the wings of the lion and the four-headed leopard of the Daniel 7 represented the periods, as previously explained on the pages 33 and 34, then the two great wings must denote two great periods of the church history, for the eagle being king of the birds, and as it is emphasized that they were of a great eagle, it is evident that the symbol must apprehend each period from its beginning. Thus, one of the wings that takes in the entire church history from the fall of the Adam unto the crucifixion of the Yahshua, and the other from his crucifixion unto the end of this present world, his second coming. Thus it proves that there is only one true congregation in all ages. Her crown of the 12 stars originally represented the 12 patriarchs, and later the 12 tribes after they went out of the Egypt, at which time the wonderful light shining from the written word of the Elohim, the Bible, clothed the church woman while she was travailing with the child, the promise of the Messiah. But the crown of the 12 stars in the New Testament period stands for the 12 apostles. Number 12 is a symbol of the government. And notice that we also, in the antitype, represents the number 12, because the house of David here in the 12th parabolic hour represents the 12 tribes of Israel, being represented by the 144,000 that are appointed to come forth here in this 12th hour. Okay, for the Yahshua said unto them, you also shall sit upon thrones, upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Matthew 19:28. This fact is proven by the type, the 12 tribes. It will be noticed that in the reckoning of the tribes of the spiritual Israel, the 144,000, by the type, Israel after the flesh, as in the Revelation 7:5-8, where the tribe of the Dan is missing, and instead the tribe of the Manasseh, the firstborn son of the Joseph, is numbered. The type corresponds perfectly with the antitype, where the Judas Iscariot, being one of the 12 apostles, was cast aside, of whom Dan is a figure. And in his stead, Paul of the Tarsus was added, of whom Manasseh is a figure. Therefore, we see perfect harmony in the type and antitype. For the lesson in this instance by these unmistakable symbols teaches that the Elohim has had only one church, one truth, and one way of the salvation for all generations. The same is also expressed in the words of Paul. There is one body and one spirit, even as you are called, and one hope of your calling, one Yahweh, one faith, one baptism, one Elohim and Father of all. Ephesians 4:4-6. But the Elohim Church has been symbolized also by the earthly objects. We speak of the symbols by a woman, namely Hagar and Sarah. For the former is a symbol of the Jewish and the latter of the Christian Church. See the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 136. These earthly symbols point out Elohim's church in the different sections and conditions. But the woman clothed with the sun and her eagle's wings, being of the heavenly origin, denotes Elohim's true church truth in the one continuous line, and her child, our only Savior and Redeemer in both periods before and after the Yahshua. The crown of the 12 stars in the New Testament period, John's vision in the 12th chapter of the Revelation, deals with the two main subjects, namely the woman clothed with the sun and the red dragon. The latter has been explained. See pages 65 to 69. It says, for the symbol of the woman in the New Testament time covers three divisions. First, the apostolic period. Second, her absence from the civilization in the wilderness for the 1260 days, that is the year, the 1260 years of the papal persecution, Revelation 12:6 and verse 14. Third, as the last period of the church while in the conflict with the dragon, Revelation 12:15-17. The first and second period shall be explained in the connection with another study. Okay, so now we're looking at the woman of the Revelation 12. An explanation of the third person is found in the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 151 and 152. Once again, we'll reread that. It says, the woman of Revelation 12. An explanation of the third period is found in the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, pages 151 and 152. Therefore, our intention in this chapter is to briefly visualize a lesson taught by her crown of the 12 stars. We ask the question, who appointed these present-day self-styled apostolic authorities? It is said that after the apostles passed away, another set of the same number have a right to be apostles. Suppose the claim is true. There are hundreds of churches, and if each one of them had 12 apostles, there could be a multiplicity of the thousands of them at one time. And if that act had been repeated in every age, there would be an innumerable multitude of the apostles at the appearance of Yahshua. If there have been thousands of apostles, it is evident by the following scripture that they shall never enter this city of the Elohim as apostles, for inspiration says, and the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the name of the 12 apostles of the Lamb, Revelation 21:14. What is the difference between an apostle and a minister of the gospel? If there is no difference, then there should have been more than 12 apostles in the early church, for there were more than 12 engaged in the ministry. Yahshua had appointed 12, but Judas was counted out, leaving only 11. After Yahshua ascended on high, the 11 agreed to appoint another in the Judas's place, and the lot fell upon Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11 apostles, Acts 1:26. Therefore, they made up the number. Now, if the Matthias took Judas' place, then there must be 13 such men according unto the Romans 1:1. Paul, as a servant of Yahshua Messiah, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of the Yahshua, the Messiah. Mark carefully that the woman's crown has only 12 stars, and in the foundation of the city there are only the names of the 12 apostles. Which one of the two, Matthias or Paul, is not recognized by him who laid the precious foundation of the holy city? If we say Paul, we make him a liar. If we say Matthias, then his ordination by the 11 had no effect in the appointing an apostle. What then? And the Acts 1:26 is the first and last we hear of the Matthias, but not so of Paul. If Matthias is an apostle, then he surely is not as worthy as Paul, which one of the ordinations would be most honorable? Is it Paul's by Yahshua himself as he met him on the way to Damascus, or Matthias by the hands of the apostles? For the question is clear, no man's hands are qualified to ordain an apostle, regardless of his high standing in the connection with the gospel. For the holy hand of Yahshua and his personal presence only can appoint one for such an office. This is unimpeachable evidence, for the woman has a crown of only 12 stars. Therefore, who has the power to ordain another and thus multiply the stars? What is an apostle? Answer. One that is separated unto the gospel of the Elohim. But if this is the only meaning of the title, then all who are engaged in the proclamation of the gospel, being separated, must be apostles. Therefore, the word apostle must have a special significance and a deeper meaning than simply separated unto the gospel of the Elohim. For the apostle Paul was called to be an apostle for the Gentiles. Thus he, with the 11, became the earthly founders of the church of the Gentiles, and Yahshua the divine head, speaking of the gifts in the church. Apostles are the first, for without a founder there would be no organization. Thus the rest of the gifts follow. See 1 Corinthians 12:28. For the crown is her glory, and the stars, the 12 apostles, are her only earthly authority. So the 144,000 then would be the only earthly authority then for her government here in the 12th hour. Here is a striking evidence that the present day apostles are falsely so called. A prophet may claim authority as a prophet, but never as an apostle. However, there is a difference between the prophets and of the Old Testament and the ones of the New, for the latter being under the authority of the former. In the other words, he may be an interpreter or revealer of the Bible. For all the prophets and the law, at the ceremonial and the type, prophesied until John, Matthew 11:13. For the interpretation is correct only when inspiration by the Holy Spirit is employed, thus timely utterances are revealed. Not only do the annals of the history prove this, really the Bible is very emphatic on the subject, for it plainly says that we are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Yahshua Messiah himself being the chief cornerstone. Ephesians 2:20. Again we read, howbeit when the Spirit of the truth is come, he will guide you into all truth, and for he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. John 16:13. Where is the need of for such apostles? Are not the words of the apostles in the Bible? If we should appoint a set of such men, would we not set aside the woman and her 12-star crown? If we set aside the crown by the voluntary action of the apostles, what will we do with the gospel committed unto the church by the Yahshua ordained apostles? Here the authority by the crown of the stars, that though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, to say, I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that you have received, let him be accursed. Galatians 1:8-9. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Yahshua. 2 Corinthians 11:13. This brings the close of our study. This hour you can contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close this service now with a song. King of the Universe by the Elijah David. Someday I shall go to that city where the sojourn here on earth is over. And behold the King in his glory. praise his name, King of the universe, ruler of all, highest in the heavens, upon whom we call for daily mercies, forgiveness of sin. Our lone benefactor, emancipator, and friend. He came to this earth as a redeemer of men. He walked by the wayside, a wayfarer's friend. Gave hope and salvation, he showed men the way. And promised to return on that great final day. Praise his name, King of the universe, ruler of all, highest in the heavens, upon whom we call for daily mercies, forgiveness of sin. Our lone benefactor, emancipator, and friend. Oh, the beautiful city where there is no night. The streets are purest gold, the Lamb is the light. The walls are like jasper, a glorious sight. The saints are his trophies, all dressed in pure white. So come, little children, lend me your ear. The hope for the future is past drawing near. For the pathway to glory us children have found, and they won't be contented till heaven comes down. Praise his name, King of the universe, ruler of all, highest in the heavens, upon whom we call for daily mercies, forgiveness of sin. Alone, benefactor, emancipator, and friend.